With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to Bundesliga for Beginners, the podcast about the Bundesliga from beginners for beginners. You should understand what we're doing by now. I hope that we do as well. I'm Jamie Smith. Co-host is Kevin De Vries, who you'll recognise from the EPL Roundtable show. We share the same channel as them. Jim Knight's also back with us today. Jim's also on that podcast regularly. And our Bundesliga expert, John McKenzie, completes the crew. Busy weekend of Bundesliga action then. We'll start with the first intrapod derby between Gladbach and Leverkusen. And someone predicted the outcome correctly. How did that happen?
Well, we as experts is mostly how that wound up happening, and also just being overly confident. But yeah, in the preview show, I said I thought it was going to be Leverkusen 3-1 based on evidence, probably. That did actually end up being the scoreline. And Leverkusen just looked really, really good. Turns out this would have been a little bit more predictable in hindsight, as Leverkusen have the joint most wins away from home this season. There's like a stats bell dinging in the background somewhere. Havertz was really good again, but we don't need to name the show after him again. But two goals from two shots on target, had a third that went off the crossbar, also had a clear assist that he could have laid off to Demirbay, but Demirbay? We'll work on that. But
one of those, probably.
Yeah, maybe. I took four swings at it. Maybe one of them. But he just didn't lay it off fast enough. But he was just a menace going forward. Also, Tapsoba is like really good. So I was really kind of frustrated that I was going to miss out on seeing Jonathan Tah again. Looked it up. Turns out it's a back injury is why he's not playing right now. But it had obviously been lured in by John in that first episode by Leverkusen's talent. And I was like, oh, yeah, Jonathan Tah, that'll be exciting. But apparently Tapsoba's just, like, really good in his own right, so it doesn't matter. Didn't know that he had only moved there in January, which is crazy. Only 2 years removed from a U19 side in Portugal, so how good he has gotten this quick is really incredible. And I kind of mentioned him in the last episode, but didn't know that I was when I was talking about how good Leverkusen were from passing from the back and splitting the lines that way, and it was largely him. He's very good on the ball, and you can't imagine, sorry my fellow Leverkusen lovers, you can't imagine that his stop at Leverkusen is going to be particularly long if he continues to play as well as he has the last 2 weeks. There's also a whole bunch of stats about how much better Leverkusen have been ever since he signed, but since there was a 2 month gap in the middle, don't feel like putting too much weight into that. On the whole, it was just really good. Did start having issues with Thuram late in the first half, even though he was still out wide. Just as Jim mentioned previously, his skill, pace, strength combination is a little absurd. And then when he moved centrally, there were real problems at the back. Dragovic didn't look great, but apparently it was his first match back in a while. Well, I guess it's everyone's first match back in a while, but he was also hurt. But anyway, I don't know if he would stick at the back once Tah comes back, but Thuram was just causing all kinds of issues through the middle once that happened, and it kind of seemed like as the match continued that Leverkusen were kind of doing some defense by numbers rather than individually defending well, but it ended up working out. And then I have a final thought about Diaby that I'll ask after Jim talks about his view of the Leverkusen side. Sorry, that's my team. Mönchengladbach side, we're working on it.
Still getting used to which teams we support. Good. Yeah, it was a tough watch, I think, from a Mönchengladbach angle, because it felt like there were opportunities there that weren't taken. It was really frustrating to see Mbolo go off so early, particularly the way they'd set up with him kind of saying, kind of, I think once he went off injured after kind of 10 or 12 minutes, it kind of threw everything else out a little bit and took a bit of time to get back into the swing of things, by which point Leverkusen had obviously, well, they'd already gone ahead by the time Mbolo had gone off, but it just kind of stunted any revival. I thought Thuram was excellent. I'm a little bit frustrated that it took till half time to make him switch more centrally, because it seemed obvious to me that the way that Leverkusen would set up, he could get at them. Now, I haven't seen obviously enough of Mönchengladbach to know that, and I'm sure Marco Rosen knows more than me about his team. It was just that the change was so instant, you know, like after half time, it just seemed to click, and within 7 or 8 minutes, I guess, of half time, Thuram had scored. Beautiful kind of finish into the bottom corner, really nicely worked. And although, I mean, to be fair, it's worth mentioning that Leverkusen probably should have been out of sight by this point. Really, really presentable chances, although Havertz had a really good day. You know, on another day, he could have had another couple of goals. And there were some pretty spectacular misses aside from his as well, particularly from close range. So 3-1, I don't think anyone can argue with that from a Mönchengladbach angle. It just felt like an opportunity missed, really. I guess we might have come on to it a bit later in terms of like being at home and stuff. And it just, yeah, it took a little while to recover from Mbolo going off. And by that point, Leverkusen were much the better side. Frustrating afternoon for the... for the Mönchengladbach contingent, unfortunately.
To be fair, I think you did deserve another one. I think it should have been 4-2, although I said that on Twitter, kind of expected goals to back me up on that, which it did not. But because there was that double save by Hradecky.
Yeah, it was a good... I mean, not to heap too much praise on us, and Kev obviously got the scoreline correct, but I think we were all pretty much in agreement that it was going to be a really, really open game when we previewed it, and so it turned out to be. I think, like Kev said, it could have been several more goals on each side, really. It was a great watch from a neutral perspective, obviously. I think we'd set it up to be like game of the weekend in terms of the potential for goals. Obviously, there are a couple more that got a bit more out of hand. Goals count. But yeah, I think it certainly lived up to our expectations of being a thoroughly enjoyable watch. If you were a kind of fan of teams thriving in the final third and maybe not being as good defensively in that scene, having watched Dragovic for a little while at Leicester a couple of years ago, I was not surprised in the slightest that he was having absolute kittens when he was being tested by Hoffman and Thuram and Plié. So it was just, you know, it's frustrating that there wasn't a bit more cutting edge in that Mönchengladbach team. But, you know, beaten by the better team on the day, you've got to hold your hands up and just say that Leverkusen deserved it. Havertz is a very, very special talent by the looks of things. And, you know, I'm sure, I know we've spoken about this briefly before, but I'm guessing he'll be on plenty of teams' radars later on in the year, whether it be, you know, the back end of the summer or the early part of the autumn, whenever teams can sign players again. He'll be top of someone's list, I'm sure, whether it'll be enough to move him on. But, I mean, if you look at his form over the last kind of 10 or 12 games, he's just absolutely come to life, and he seems to have picked up after the season interruption right where he left off, which is a great sign. And, you know, you think, particularly with Germany having this huge spotlight on it at the moment with the Bundesliga and Bundesliga 2 being two of the only major leagues, and they're going to be that way for another couple of weeks, that if Havertz carries on like this, he's going to be on top of someone's scouting list if he wasn't already.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and now I'll loop back to the Diaby thing that I want to ask John about. So it's very easy to make lazy scouting comps, but I was just curious if you don't mind being put on the spot, since that's basically the premise of the show. But how would you compare where Diaby is at this point to how Mane was playing when he was in Germany?
In terms of comparing Mane and Diaby, I don't know. I mean, Mane was at Salzburg, right? So that's Austria as well.
Yeah, so I just looked it up. So what I've done there is the standard confusion name-wise between Mane and Sané, knowing Sané was in Germany, Mane at an RB club, but the one that's in Austria.
I mean, I think we've set quite a low bar on expertise so far, but
We might have gone even lower in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, I think, but getting back to Diaby, I think, yeah, he's exciting. He's as exciting a talent I think I've seen at that sort of age and that sort of position in the Bundesliga. And it will be really exciting to see where his career goes from here. But, you know, this is a tricky thing. It's that the question always is like what sort of league effects are in place in the Bundesliga. He'll presumably want to move somewhere else into maybe one of the bigger leagues in Europe, and there's no saying that that's necessarily going to be a smooth transition. I'll be watching his development with bated breath, but he seems exciting. Seems a really good player.
Any other thoughts on the Gladbach Leverkusen game before we move on, John?
Yeah, I think potentially, I mean, it's easy to forget how close the game actually was. There was a Gladbach penalty decision that was turned down, which I thought was quite strong before Leverkusen got their penalty. I actually thought the Leverkusen penalty was maybe a little bit fortunate insofar as Bellarabi got the shot away before the tackle came in, and it was a sort of momentum carries you into the tackler thing. And I think in that sort of penalty situation, you're almost giving people two chances to score, and I think that may be a little bit unfair, but I mean, it went through VAR, so I suppose there's not really much more you can do than that. But had that those decisions been reversed and Gladbach got the penalty decision ahead of that, then it could have been 2-2 and it would have been an interesting game from there on. But like we've all said, it was always going to be an open game. It was always going to have goals in it. It was always going to be exciting. But I think it would be remiss of me to judge the relative standings between those two teams on the outcome of the game, which could have gone either way.
Yeah, it was a really interesting penalty decision. I saw a lot of people who were upset about that on Twitter, the sort of thing that you just rarely see given, although I actually think it should be given more. I don't think you should be able to wipe someone out just because they've had a shot. Particularly a bugbear for me with goalkeepers, when they come out and clear out an attacker, don't get the ball, you never ever see fouls coming against it. But anyway, that's just me on my soapbox for a minute there. The weekend started, though, with the Berlin derby. If you listened to last week's podcast, John gave us a very detailed history of all of Berlin, I think. Hertha ended up being far too strong for Union. 4-0 win, one of the only home wins of the weekend, though. And this is a trend that we spoke about last week, Kev. It just doesn't seem to be home advantage without fans anymore.
Yeah, so the numbers ended up being pretty crazy in terms of this. So I think it's just the one win was them this week, or were there two this week?
Two this weekend, so them and Bayern, which we'll come on to a bit later.
Right,
as well.
And just one the last week. So in total, 3 of 18 home clubs have won since the restart. And thanks to an unnamed pseudo-German Twitter account, it was 43% of home clubs won before the break, and now it's just 16.6% since. We kind of hinted at this in the last episode that we were already seeing this trend, but the sample size was too small. Now there's been a second week where it's kind of continued. Obviously, to reach like data significance, we need a lot more, but it certainly seems to be the early trend.
Any theories as to why that might be, Jim?
I mean, the theory, I guess, with home advantage, obviously beyond the fans, is that you're kind of familiar with the surroundings. So potentially the
not just expectations. The fans, Gladbach had their old cardboard cutout.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were.
Really didn't make that much of an impact.
But they also allowed Bayer Leverkusen to have away fan cardboard cutouts, which I think really hurt them in the match.
Yeah.
The much more vocal cardboard cutout fans than you expect from an away team in this situation, obviously. It's still too early to draw massive conclusions too, but it's certainly interesting that it's borne out over 2 weeks and it is so pronounced. It might be the case of just the coronavirus preparations for matches and the kind of testing and the inability to train. I'm guessing a lot of teams still aren't training in the same way that they were before. Maybe that is stunting the impact, but there's no reason that should affect a home team more than an away team as such, I guess, unless it's just that an away team would be used to staying in a hotel or whatever the night before, and maybe they kind of are used to that. But it just seems very odd that it's so pronounced. I mean, again, it wouldn't be a surprise if we saw a few home wins in midweek and that then levels things off a little bit. But it certainly seems, maybe it's the impact on the referees as well. You know, talking about the slightly contentious penalty decision in the Mönchengladbach Leverkusen game. Does that decision get given if there are thousands and thousands of home fans, you know, jeering the ref and that kind of thing? You're not sure. Maybe they're seeing things a little bit more 50-50 in isolation without the fans. It's just, yeah, it's a very sterile environment, obviously, and maybe that's just kind of reducing the impact of that home advantage to a point where it's just played out on the results. I mean, it's so skewed that it can't stay like this forever. We're not going to go through a few more weeks and have 17% home wins, I don't think. He says that now, put all your money on every away win going in the midweek coupon. But we'll see. I mean, it wouldn't be surprising if it was significantly down at the end of the season, but I can't see it staying as low as 17%. I think that's unsustainable still.
Yeah, it's probably too early to judge, but at this stage, it seems to be one of the major trends of the resumption. I'm just looking at something Jim dug out that Marco Hare tweeted, comparison of games before the break, after the break. A lot of the stats actually very similar, apart from home wins. So things like goals per game, underdogs winning, even things like cards per game, corners per game, a lot of these things are very similar. John, coming to the game itself, the two teams very close together in the table before this result, but Union's defence just couldn't really cope with her. So really, really one-sided game in the end.
Yeah, it was an interesting game because it was one of those games you watch and you're sort of, it didn't feel like a 4-0 win. It felt as though Union did like respectably enough. It felt as though Hertha were quite, that they sat very deep in their build-up play. They were trying to draw out Union in many respects. And for the most part, it just seemed as though it was working. And then they just seemed to manage to grab four goals. And so it was a weird game for me because it felt more like a sort of fairly close game that suddenly just had the scoreline get away with it. But it was quite fascinating seeing the way that Hertha were dropping so deep with their centre-backs and then pushing their double pivot forward. And there was just so much of a gap between those two. And Union was sitting in a fairly deep block, and they just didn't seem interested in closing down the ball when Hertha had it deep. And in the end, Hertha just sort of found their way into the channels. They had a couple of good performances from their wide players, and that was the difference between them.
Yeah, I think Union's problem is defensively, from what I've seen of them in the last two rounds. I only had the second half on in the background because I was Zoom quizzing. By the way, I've managed to move from joint last to second last, so getting better every week. But yeah, Union's defence just seems to be a little bit all over the place. Moving on to the next games that we're going to talk about then, title watch, wins for Bayern, Dortmund and Leipzig. Dortmund start things off with a 2-0 win at Wolfsburg. Fullbacks on the score sheet again, Guerrero and Hakimi. I watched that game instead of Gladbach Leverkusen, and it was quite even actually, but Dortmund just too much speed on the break to get the second goal to kill it. The interesting thing about this game was that Wolfsburg had some crowd noise in. That's the first game in the Bundesliga where I've noticed this. Someone stopped me if they've seen it from another game, but I think I prefer a bit of crowd noise.
I actually have a little bit of information about this. Ooh, look who's an expert now.
Oh, my God.
So it actually raised controversy here in the States. So the Mainz game was... Nope, Colin. Jesus Christ. Is the first
It was
match.
All going so well.
Was it? anyway, it was the first one here in the States to have crowd noise. And Fox mentioned that there's basically an option. Broadcasters from the Bundesliga have been offered the option of having crowd noise or not. So different matches are having them. And it sounds like here in the States we're opting to have it more, but apparently some of today's matches didn't have it in the UK and in other broadcast markets, but it's literally up to the broadcast company which matches they want to put it on.
It's a bit like the I think the Premier League broadcasters have the option to pipe in the communication to Stockley Park as well for VAR, from what I've heard, and they chose not to, which seems stupid, but hey ho. But yeah, unless I'm misremembering it, I think that is technically an option for the broadcasters, but they chose not to do it. So it seems slightly odd that people are so against piping in crowd noise. I mean, it's just, surely it just adds a bit more realism to a very sterile kind of product and makes it a bit more palatable for someone who might be tuning in for the first time.
I think it is a TV thing, isn't it? I mean, I don't think, even if it was in the stadium, I don't think the players are going to react any differently.
It would have to be pretty loud, I think, if it was going to be in the stadium to make an audible difference to
or the biggest Zoom call ever. and fans at home get to pay money to have their audio piped through the stadium.
There's a team in, I want to say, Denmark, who are going to be doing this when their league resumes. You can tune in via Zoom, and they're going to have big video screens. It sounds like something off Black Mirror or a Chris Morris spoof or something, but they're going to have these giant videos, and you'll be able to watch it through Zoom or somehow. I don't understand how it works, obviously, but you'll be able to like sing songs and do chants and stuff, and it will apparently be broadcast. I'm sure it's a Danish team. There's a lot of people talking about it on Twitter this week.
They've been doing that at Bayern, actually. The UK Bayern fan club have been having big Zoom calls where they all
really
Zoom in, and they cheer along the team through Zoom. So yeah, and they've been playing that at halftime. Some clips from that in the BT coverage.
Oh, cool. This is actually going to be in the stadium though, apparently. So it's one step beyond that. I'm sure leagues like the Premier League that are working on their resumption, and then we're keeping a close eye on this and looking at how it all works. See if there's a way to make it more entertaining to watch. Since John mentioned Bayern there, we'll go to the Bayern game next. Riotously entertaining match, this one. The high scoring game of the weekend. 5-2 against Eintracht Frankfurt. And there's one guy that you noticed in particular, Kev.
Yeah, Thomas Müller is really good. And I noticed on Twitter a whole lot of people seemed surprised that Thomas Müller was really good. And apparently that's because I largely missed like a 2-year downturn in his performances. So, John, I was just wondering, what's the lay of the land with Müller, and why were people like, wow, he's really good?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. I think obviously Bayern had a bit of a blip when they had Kovacs as their manager. And I think a lot of people, whenever that sort of thing happens, it's inevitable that players who are underperforming, who are getting towards the end of their career, are sort of held up as being on the inevitable downward slope. But there's been a lot of positivity about Hansi Flick. He's come in after Kovacs. And yeah, he seems to have got Bayern purring again. And Thomas Müller had a very Thomas Müller performance. He scored a very Thomas Müller goal, which involved a very awkward bringing the ball under control, but then a very smart finish. And he continues to be the Raumdeuter that people call him. He seems to just find pockets of space, seems to be able to manipulate those spaces in opposition's defences. And it's been nice seeing him have a resurgence, really.
Yeah, there's a statistic that I wish I'd looked up now, because I want to read it out on the show and I want to have to try and find it on my phone. Most assists in the Bundesliga this season?
I think it's 17 assists more than anyone
17
else.
Assists, yeah. You don't really think of Müller as a creator, do you? But it just shows that, despite the fact people seem to have moved on from him as thinking he's an elite talent, he's still having a massive impact. And he seems to be a really important cog for this Bayern team, in that he's not necessarily as flashy as Lewandowski or the wide players or even someone like Thiago, but he's someone who really makes sure that they get the job done.
They've dropped him slightly deeper as well this season, because usually he was playing in that front three, but they came out with front three of Kingsley Coman, Lewandowski and Ivan Perisic, and he sat in the midfield three just on the outside on the right, which I think is probably why he's been picking up more assists than perhaps he has in the past. So I think that's a really interesting positional reinvention for him.
And might be about to save them a ton of money, because I saw a couple articles this week talking about why the reason they didn't renew Coutinho's deal was because Müller had been performing better than him in that position.
A lot of sense.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Let's move on then. And Leipzig made sure it was clean sweep for the, probably the three front runners for the title, although Leverkusen might not consider themselves out of it. Mainz took another beating from them, having lost 8-0 earlier in the season. This time they kept it to 5, so well done. Timo Werner, hat-trick in both of those fixtures. He's back to form after a few games without a goal. And in the ask a stupid question of the Bundesliga expert part of the show, John, Mainz 0-5 obviously lends itself to obvious jokes because they lost 5-0. Why do so many of these Bundesliga teams, you've got Schalke 0-4 as well, why have they got that number in the name? Is it a really obvious explanation?
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. It's in the most part, it's because these teams have taken the year of their foundation into their team name. So, yeah, Null Funf is 1905, the year that Mainz were formed, and Null Vier is when 04 is when Schalke were formed. So, yeah, there's quite a few of them that do that, and a lot of them make a big thing of the year that they were formed anyway. So, Gladbach formed in 1900, and they kind of make a big thing of that without even putting it in the names. But there's lots of fun stuff about the names, because if you actually look at the full names of some of the clubs, they have like really quite long and storied names for their clubs. I think a lot of the time to do with the various historics behind their formations. So, if some of them were started in sort of social clubs, they'll often have a kind of hat tip towards that, and they all don't really follow the sort of general FC that we have a lot in the UK. So you'll have, so SC Freiburg is Sports Club Freiburg, and then you have the inevitable histrionics around RB Leipzig who have the
not the Red obviously Bull, like,
yeah, exactly, not Red Bull. It stands for Rasenballsport, which means lawn ball sport, which is not actually a phrase in German, so but make of that what you will.
But it's definitely nothing to legal do trouble.
Yeah, exactly. It's got nothing to do with Red Bull, the company that owns RB Leipzig,
who Mane actually play for. It should be noted.
true. So technically, he played in the Bundesliga, right? He played in the Austrian Bundesliga. So in that respect, you're bang on.
Coming up next week, Austrian Bundesliga for beginners. Kev will be hosting on his own.
I will say, John, I think in hindsight, would it have been wise for German clubs to have been started in a different decade so there wouldn't be so many memes about their scorelines?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the German football was obviously a little bit behind English football. A lot of English football started at the end of the 19th century, so you get a lot of clubs like you're a Spurs fan, so they were in the 1880s, it was 82. Mm-hmm. But because Germany's just that little bit further behind, because they had to wait for football to spread there, you've got a lot of them in the early 1900s. So I'm a Leeds fan, and they were formed in 1919, which is relatively late for a storied British club, but that was because they were born out of a different club that went on to fail. So there's a lot of interesting history. It'd be quite fun to do something maybe on the names behind the clubs, because some of them just have incredibly long names that are really sort of quirky. So that's quite an interesting aspect of German football as well.
We can certainly look into doing that in a future show. If people interested in that, please do let us know. At Bundesliga Pod is the Twitter name that I only got to mention at the start of the show, like I was meant to. One of the reasons I brought this up was Augsburg did a Twitter banter because they won 3-0 at Schalke today, and it's Schalke 04 in the badge, so they did a Schalke 03. My beloved Augsburg, who I was already to hate after 1 week of supporting them, came up trumps with a fantastic result. Another big away win in keeping with a lot of the league this season. Very clinical display. And Schalke are in real trouble. I think it's 9 games without a win now, obviously spanning before the coronavirus break and now. David Wagner must be coming under some pressure, really, John. I thought he'd fallen upwards a bit into that job after leaving Huddersfield, but it's really not going well for them.
Yeah, I feel bad for Wagner because he took a took over a Schalke team who were in freefall the season before and potentially going to go down, and they'd been managed by Domenico Tedesco, who is held up as one of these young laptop managers that were coming through the system. He was someone who'd done better in the training system is called, whereby they train coaches, than Julian Nagelsmann. So there was a lot of people saying that, you know, there was going to be a long-term German rivalry between these two coaches, and Tedesco went to Schalke and came a cropper a little bit. And then obviously Wagner comes in and in the Hinrunde, so the first round of the season, the first half of the season, he did quite well and had them challenging for European places. But then when the Rückrunde started, it all fell apart. And there's lots of questions about why that has happened. But I mentioned it, I think, last week, that Schalke have such a high expectation from their fan base because they do have that history that that they expect to be challenging for the top of the table every season, and every time it doesn't happen, it seems as though there's a moratorium about what the manager has done to prevent that, rather than looking at what's actually going on behind the club a little bit more. And I think the majority of people would agree that Schalke have struggled to score goals for a number of seasons now. They simply haven't sorted out the problem of bringing in a goal scorer. And when you've got managers like Tedesco and Wagner there, you've got to think that it's not simply a managerial problem. There's got to be something more structural going on there. So I do feel bad for Wagner. And I mentioned before in the WhatsApp group, you know, especially at this point when there's the English fans flooding in to watch German football at this point in time. And he's actually had quite a good season, and then he's fallen off a cliff in the last few match days. So I feel bad for him because people will be coming over and obviously making that allusion to his time at Huddersfield.
It's a good point, isn't it, Jim? Because if you're someone who's only started the Bundesliga in the last couple of weeks, like us, you'd be looking at a manager that we recognise from the Premier League, and he's had a 4-0 defeat and a 3-0 defeat from his first two games. It doesn't seem to be going well at all.
No, and obviously I can't comment with any kind of authority on the start of the season and how well he's done, you know, up until this point. It's worth noting, I guess, that Schalke are still only eighth. You know, it's not like they're in massive relegation trouble and stuff and sliding down the table. Obviously, they had a good start to the season and have kind of fallen off a while ago and kind of carried on that trend after the break. But, I mean, the thing that struck me in the Schalke-Augsburg game today, like, Schalke were just playing themselves into so many really stupid situations.
Yeah, especially at the Augsburg, back.
Yeah, Augsburg were good. Like, don't get me wrong, very clinical, and they put their chances away. But in reality, they didn't really have to show much cutting edge. All they really had to do was punt the ball up front to the opposition, and then Schalke would inevitably just shoot themselves in the foot and give it back to them like 25 yards out with like a 2-on-2 situation on several occasions. And it happened like a few times before the second goal. I mean, the first one was an absolute beautiful free kick, and obviously not, I guess the keeper might be a bit disappointed. Obviously, we know Schalke have got their gripes with their goalkeeping situation as it is. But, okay, not the worst thing in the world to be beaten by a free kick of that quality. But the second and third goals were just abysmal to watch. Like, it's just schoolboy defending. It was just like they didn't have any confidence in clearing the ball. And for a team that were training for so long, they showed so little themselves going forward. I can imagine most Schalke fans are just banging their heads off the desk, like watching the game. But like, where is this next goal going to come from? Because they don't look like scoring, and they sure as hell don't look like keeping the opposition out at any stage. And this is, you know, Jamie said he was already going to grow to hate an Augsburg team that have lost their last four or five games on the spin coming into this match. Like, that's a huge win for them down in the bottom of the table. And if that's the quality that it takes to make a serious impact against Schalke, who are supposed to be a half-decent team in mid-table, then what are a better team? You know, we saw Dortmund hand them a 4-0 win, really, without even needing to get out of second or third gear. What's it going to be like if a team actually go all guns blazing and put them to the sword properly? It could be a really big score. I'm going to have to find a team founded in... Is the team founded in 1908 that we can look to inflict that kind of defeat on Schalke? Because it's going that way.
Yeah, well, they've got Fortuna away In the midweek round that we're going to talk about in a little while. So that's a big opportunity for them to get back to winning ways. Fortuna.
Fortuna 95. So there you go. 9-5 here we go.
Wow.
That's a predictive scoreline again, but...
Before we move on to previews, we'll just touch on Freiburg. John, a bit of a missed opportunity this one with Schalke and Wolfsburg both losing in that sort of race for the top six. They went down at home to Werder Bremen, who were in the bottom two.
Yeah, it was a funny game. It's a game that I said to friends beforehand. I've got a couple of friends who are always asking me for betting tips. So they'll often use Freiburg as an example. And I said, you know, this is the sort of game that Freiburg will lose. It's against a relegation struggler. They've the other two relegation strugglers, they've already lost to this season in Paderborn and Dusseldorf as well. So it was one of those games where Freiburg came out with a very, very, very tentative, conceded a goal fairly early on. It was quite an unlucky goal in the sense that it was a Davy Klassen, an excellent Davy Klassen, sort of cross come through ball into Leo Bittencourt's feet, and he scored from outside the area. Really delicious finish, really. And you just don't expect that sort of thing to happen. And then from there on in, it was just Bremen sitting deep and Freiburg just not having the able to break them down. And we've seen this actually happen a lot. A friend of mine described Freiburg as the Manchester United of Germany, because you know, they're a team who will get good results against teams where they're sitting deep and catching them on the counter attack, but when they're in the reverse situation and expected to break down a deep defense, they just don't have the quality or players to do that. But Freiburg are just an incredible team in terms of when you actually look at how little money they spend in terms of keeping their team afloat. They are one of the largest over achievers in world football, and so that's just part and parcel of what it is. And you know, there's quite a nice aspect to supporting them because of that. And again, another friend of mine describes them as the Burnley of German football. So no apologies to Jamie there, because I really love both Burnley and Freiburg. So that's the sort of sense of the game that you're expecting.
Wow, John showing off about how many friends he's got there. Ooh. You won't know them. They go to a different...
they all go to a different podcast.
It's only because of my betting knowledge. That's what it is, you know. With friends like these, who needs enemies?
Well, quite. Other results at the bottom. Paderborn still bringing up the reel, but they got a point at home to Hoffenheim, so a bit of hope for them. And the last game, just before we were recording, Fortuna Dusseldorf were 2-0 up at Cologne, and then conceded twice. So we got a draw out of that one. Bit of a disaster for them. It looked like it was going to be three away wins today, and Fortuna just let us down on that front.
Yeah, Köln obviously had the 2-2 draw last week where they had the lead and then conceded two, and then this week they're like, no, let's mix it up, concede the first two, then we'll score the next two.
They scored them right at the end. The 87th minute was the first goal, and didn't look likely that we were going to get back into it in the 86th minute, so really good turnaround from them. They've got some fun strikers in Jan Cordoba and Antonio Modest, who scored, so a real sort of chuck the big guys on up front and see what can happen kind of result there.
Here's a random question for you. Where does Mateta play? Because Tottenham were linked with him earlier in the season, and I forget.
Mainz, I believe.
What, is he hurt or something?
Yeah, he is at Mainz. He must be injured, because they would be. I'm certain they'd be playing him if he weren't. But you'll be surprised to hear that I don't keep up with the ins and outs of the squad at Mainz as closely as maybe I should. So I apologise. Maybe my expert nature is under threat here.
No, it's
really
fine.
Stretching the Bundesliga experts. This random player.
It's a real 0-5 loss for me there.
I haven't regularly displayed a capability of accurately naming the clubs that I'm talking about, so I think you're pretty safe.
Completely out of nowhere there. But yeah, I think if you're looking for late drama from the midweek round, then Hoffenheim v Köln might be the game to watch if someone goes 2-0 up in particular. Speaking of the midweek round, seamless link as always. Der Klassiker this week, Kev. Tuesday night, Dortmund v Bayern. Massive for the title race. Bayern have a 4-point lead.
Yeah, it's going to be a crazy one for sure. Although, as we talked about in the chat, with all these away wins, you think that probably favors Bayern Munich a bit. So before this week, I think I probably would have favored Dortmund just the way both clubs played in their first match. But obviously Bayern kind of finding their ruthless streak just in time before this match this weekend with the bevy of goals that they scored. yeah, it's obviously massive, as you say, for the title chase. For some reason, I just have a softer spot for Dortmund. Maybe it's not for some reason. Maybe it's just because Bayern Munich are basically the Yankees, and they've won everything ever. How many in a row have they won? Like four or five?
I thought it was like seven.
What season are we even on now? Have they technically won this season already?
Fortunately, we're not guessing on things that listeners could just easily look up. But Bayern have won it way too many times
seven.
In a row.
Seven in a row.
Nailed it. But yeah, I'd definitely like to see Dortmund crack that. And signing Haaland in January gives them probably the best chance they ever would have had of actually catching up and closing that gap. Obviously, the win does it. It brings them within a point, although it kind of seems like it's pretty unlikely that anybody ever takes points off of Bayern ever. So maybe that 1 point gap, even after this match, would still be somewhat insurmountable. But I'd certainly like to see it from Dortmund. I didn't see their match this week because it was on at the same time as the Interpod derby between Jim and myself. But I'm just going to back them arbitrarily. I think Dortmund win this one, 2-1.
Brilliant. with that in mind, Jim, Dortmund could be without Hummels and Sancho. Sancho's still coming back to full fitness. Hummels went off injured at the weekend. Obviously, English football fans will be looking towards Sancho to make a big impact on this game. And he did have an impact off the bench this weekend, setting up the second goal. But Dortmund really need him to be fitting in the team for that game.
Yeah, you would think so. It's a game that Bayern have dominated in recent meetings, certainly in the league. I was just looking at the kind of recent history between the pair because, you know, it tends to be, if you're going to one Bundesliga game every 3 or 4 months, it's going to be the Klassiker, right, between these two, because it tends to be the most hyped game of the season. Bayern, in the last four league meetings, have a 6-0 win, a 5-0 win, and a 4-0 win.
Oof, not looking good for my expert opinion.
Yeah, I mean, granted, they were all at home, so maybe the home advantage for Dortmund will swing things in their favour, but it's certainly a game where Bayern have had the best of it in recent times, certainly in the league. I know they lost in the Super Cup at the start of the season to Dortmund, but I think we just want a Dortmund win here, don't we? Just to make it really, really interesting, because it feels almost like if Bayern come away from this game with all 3 points, the title's kind of gone. You can't see them dropping enough points for it to swing back in Dortmund's favour. They're going to have to drop 7 points over the course of, 6 weeks or 6 game weeks. So that's a really, really big ask, considering how imperious they've been for the most part. As we've just said, for the last 7 years, they've won this title. So I think for a neutral perspective, you just want Dortmund to go out, get the 3 points, and then you could be in for a real, real nail biter of a conclusion to the season, which is ultimately what would make the Bundesliga even more watchable, in the sense that if there's a genuine chance of a two horse race going into the final couple of weeks, people will be a bit more sold on it as well. So yeah, fingers crossed that Dortmund come out and do the business. And if Sancho and Haaland can be a big part of that, then more's the better.
Yeah, it would certainly bunch up the top of the table, wouldn't it? If Leipzig and Leverkusen, Gladbach, if they could get results in this midweek round as well, it would suddenly look like a top five who were all in contention. John, as Jim was just saying there, though, it's been incredibly one-sided in recent seasons. And a lot of people will think that's wild, that the two biggest clubs in the country can have had so many massive mismatches.
Yeah, you've got to remember that the Bundesliga has been, the history of the Bundesliga has meant that Bayern have been favoured a huge amount. We talk a lot about the 50+1 rule that exists, whereby the shares of a club have to be owned 50% plus one share by the fans. And that's obviously designed to prevent any sort of external corporation coming in and taking over control, which has meant that financially a lot of the clubs haven't been able to catch up at the top. But for Bayern, it's worked out fine. And it's only recently, I think, when they realize that they're falling behind in terms of the European competition, that they've really started pushing out against that 50+1 rule. So you've always got that in the back of your mind for these things. You know, the disparity is there. You think of Dortmund as being a great club, and obviously they are, but Bayern really do have the traditional firepower in terms of finances behind them. And you have to bear that in mind when you're looking at the results in the past few seasons as well, because there's always the situation where the pressure is always on Dortmund. Like that, it will be close, particularly in the last couple of seasons, going into the second half of the season. But just the amount of pressure there is on Dortmund to actually pull off a result in the second game against Bayern, but also the fact that in terms of the depth of squad and the experience, Bayern are always going to be far ahead. So I just always expect Dortmund to not cry under the pressure, perhaps, but feel the pressure certainly. And so it will take something special from Favre's players to turn that around. And Favre's teams, I mentioned again in previous episodes, they do have a habit of sort of cracking under that pressure. So I expect to see a Bayern win, but that doesn't mean to say that there couldn't be an upset. And obviously, we would all want to see that, so that the title race goes down to the wire.
Sure, and we've mentioned this before, of course, but Bayern have a habit of hoovering up all the best players from other teams, and they've done that to Dortmund in the past as well. So maybe it's not too much of a surprise that there has been this sort of gulf between the two teams when you consider they've picked up players like Lewandowski from Dortmund, which is obviously strengthening themselves massively, and a major rival as well, being all Bayern-y about it. And the other games that we've got to look forward to in this move. Midweek round. By the way, midweek round, you mentioned something off the cuff to us before, off air, John. They call it an English round, is it? Because it's midweek? What's that all about?
Yeah, they call it the English of Ocher, which just means English week. And I guess it's because there's so few midweek rounds in German football, because they have fewer teams and fewer cup games, so that they don't need to squeeze in games quite so readily as we do in England. So yeah, it's English of Ocher this week.
So there you go. Plenty of reasons to tune in. It's basically English football. Other games that we've got to look forward to this midweek. Kev, your Bayer Leverkusen lads in action at home to Wolfsburg. Another top six battle. Wolfsburg, sixth in the table. Your boys in fourth. Big one in the race for Champions League qualification.
Yeah, well, as we all know, in the last episode, I had said we'd already played Wolfsburg, so I got to imagine we'll be even more prepared.
well, you'll know exactly how they're going to play.
Yeah, exactly. They don't press much, according to what I said last time. But, yeah, I mean, just based on how the match this week went and even the week previous, Leverkusen definitely on a roll. Also mentioned the unmentioned Tepsoba stats, so things have been going very well since he was brought in January. Havertz, obviously in incredible form right now. Diaby had two assists in the first match. Wasn't as much of a presence in this last one, but just his pace and ability to create simultaneously is really, really difficult for people to defend. So you can't imagine that'll last too much longer. It's got to be a win. It's the mighty Leverkusen. Mighty's in the name, because that's how I keep saying it. So yeah, let's just double down. It's 3-1 again.
2-2 as well since you started supporting them, so maybe you're a lucky mascot.
Yeah, it's really not too bad. I hope Ta's back. Apparently he might be, so fingers crossed on that, because I do just want to see him play again. Also, Leon Bailey, I wasn't that impressed, which was really disappointing, because he was such a huge name a couple of years ago as a prospect. Of course, we've talked about that in a previous episode, and I just want to see new Paulinho, because Tottenham had old Paulinho and that was iffy at best.
Well, certainly we'll back on that on the next show. Jim Gladbach looking to bounce back at Werder Bremen, who was second bottom.
Yeah, second bottom, but coming off a big win in the context of the league over Freiburg this weekend. So, you know, they'll be looking to put a few more points between them and Paderborn at the bottom of the league, albeit even if they won, I don't think they could get out of the 17th spot. Where they currently are, but I think it shows they're a dangerous opponent. They're in absolutely abysmal form before they beat Freiburg, and have been for some time. So hopefully Mönchengladbach can get back to winning ways, particularly with the lack of home advantage. You'd like to think that would play into Mönchengladbach's hands. It certainly worked against Frankfurt in the first game post-coronavirus suspension. So yeah, we've gone from winning 3-1 to losing 3-1. So hopefully it will go swing back in the 3-1 away win camp again, and continue keeping the pressure on the likes of Bayer Leverkusen and RB Leipzig in the race for the Champions League places.
We are going to start lobbying the club to change their name.
Absolutely.
To match them if this 100% record keeps continuing.
Yeah, if there's already some crazy names kicking around, we might as well add Bayer Leverkusen to the list, and then we can do an episode on that one and claim you the credit.
Exactly, yeah, we'll bring it up on the name episode. Also, it is literally the first time since the year of our Lord 2009 that I changed my Twitter name was to Bayer Leverkusen. Wow. So you got to imagine that's had an impact on the squad.
Cause, right? That's commitment to the cause right there.
It's clearly what's inspiring them. I think this is making all the difference. They don't have any home fans, so... Kev's Twitter name is clearly coming.
it's really given them the push they needed.
Exactly. These games all Tuesday. Freiburg also in action Tuesday. John away to Eintracht.
Yes, it's a shame that we didn't take points against Bremen because they're the last club really who we would be the favourites against. Maybe Frankfurt we would be the favourites against, but after that it's a horrible run of Leverkusen, Gladbach, Hertha, Bayern and Schalke. So all clubs above us, I think, apart from Hertha, or maybe Hertha or above us. We're going into a rough run of fixtures. So it will be interesting to see how they pick up after that win, loss last week. So I've got everything wrong in that little section.
Well done. Wednesday night sees the return of my beloved Augsburg boys, who I now love very much after hating them for a full week. They're at home to Paderborn, they're bottom of the table, so easy 3 points in that one. We'll get a podcast out after the midweek round before next weekend, but we're coming towards the end of the show now. So this is everyone's favorite bit. Kev, how do you subscribe? I still don't know how it works.
Yeah, so I forgot about Acast the last couple of weeks. So you can also subscribe Acast. On Acast, because that's who actually hosts our shows and such. But you can also do it on iTunes and
not
Spotify.
Not anymore, they don't.
Well, yeah, probably not. But iTunes and Spotify are what people are probably actually using, and now they really won't. You can subscribe through those two. We send out the tweets for these shows, both from our actual account, from EPL Index, and from EPL Roundtable. If you're into the German football talk, you know, maybe you like the other footballs. There's also going to be a Premier League show this week, and there might be a Champions League one as well, which will be the first time we've had a trifecta since the death of our FPL show. So if you're interested, check out all of those. Also, we haven't talked to FPL Bundesliga. Maybe we never will. All right, back to you in the booth, Jamie.
I like how we're now producing the show during recording the show. Should we do this? Maybe we'll do it. Anyway, like Kev says, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at Bundesliga Pod. If you are listening and enjoying, please do get in touch. I thrive on encouragement. I will wither and die without it. Please tell me I'm doing a good job.
You're doing a good job.
Thank you. One fan who is on the show with me. Any other feedback, comments, please get in touch and let us know that you are out there. You can also get us all individually on Twitter. I'm Jamie Smith Sport. Kev, you are at Kevrov.
Mm-hmm.
Jim is Jim Knight Tweets. That's right.
It is. Correct.
And John, I think, is John _ McKenzie.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
There we go.
Got it wrong in the post last week, but I'll never do that again. I'm so sorry, John.
I didn't notice because you obviously mistagged me, so it doesn't matter.
True to my club allegiances,
John McKenzie.
Like Kevin Volland, it was all teed up for me and I missed it.
Yeah. At least I know everyone's Twitter names, even if I don't know anything about the Bundesliga, so I'm going on Trump's on. But yeah, that's our show for this week. Please get in touch. Any comments, feedback, etc. We'll be back before the weekend, wrapping up Der Klassiker and all the other big games like Augsburg v Paderborn, so you wouldn't want to miss that. I've been Jamie Smith. This has been Bundesliga for Beginners. We'll catch you next time.
99 Red Balloons. This is the outro music.
That's definitely staying in now.